I'm Dawn Kennedy, your host of the Profit Accelerator podcast. I'm an attorney, author, mentor, and CEO of a growing coffee company. Thanks for joining me on the show that looks at all aspects of business, from the mindset to the sales to the money left over at the end of the month, with tips and strategies to help you navigate this amazing ride called entrepreneurship. Thanks for making us part of your journey.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Profit Accelerator podcast. So today we're going to be talking about something pretty interesting, and this is going to be where you have a talent and a skill and you have a profession and something you do, you turn it into a business that seems like it should be a business for you. And then you actually discover there are other things that you are interested in and that you're good at, and you expand and branch out. So we're going to be talking about that today with Dan. I'm going to let him introduce himself. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you very much for inviting me.
So can you tell everyone who you are and who you serve?
So I'm an entrepreneur, former tennis player, very passionate about tennis in the past and sports in general. I've played many sports as a kid. I serve my family, God, and the people that I manage to help in business, I guess.
Amazing. So let's just start from the beginning. You were a professional tennis player. Can you tell us a little bit about that journey and how long you played?
So I played for close to 10 years. Tennis was a big part of my life, probably between the age of 10 to 18. It was an amazing, sport in educating me. I've practiced many sports, but I feel like tennis was by far the one that had the biggest impact on me. When I was around 18, I became the vice national champion of Romania, won many tournaments at a national level. And at some point, I was considering to come to the U.S. on an athletic scholarship. I had multiple offers from Utah State University, including a partial scholarship from Harvard. But in the end, I ended up realizing that even though tennis is a big passion of mine, you need to make it to the top 100 in the world in order to make actual money out of it. So because I was not really seeing myself getting there, I decided that around 19 years old that this would be a good inflection point for me to start focusing on business, not tennis anymore.
Right. So I think everybody listening into the podcast could probably say, well, it would be logical that, of course, you would open a tennis academy, and you actually did. Can you tell us about that? And then we'll get into the surprise of actually what you do now. So the tennis academy was definitely like a logical step, right?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of former tennis players become tennis coaches. So I had a chance to get some funding from the European Union through a grant program that they had. I got 25,000 euros. I started up the tennis academy. It was a great business in terms of how much my wife and I learned from it. After 4 years of growing it, I managed to sell it to somebody else. So I'm no longer in that business anymore. But it was an amazing business in terms of how many things I've learned, how to deal with clients, how to do marketing and sales. I've made many mistakes on a business with small numbers. So I feel like that was a very good way of avoiding bigger mistakes when I get to bigger businesses, I guess.
Right. Okay. So ultimately, though, you don't have much with the tennis world anymore as far as academy or playing. So what are you doing now?
So something that I actually stumbled upon while I had a tennis academy is that during the winter season, especially if you're in a cold environment, like the upper 50% of the U.S. is, like, I don't know, Chicago or places like this, you can no longer continue your activity unless you have a solution to cover. So I needed discovering solutions, and I ended up doing an airdom for myself. And then I started helping others. Then we expanded into everywhere in Romania, in Europe. Now we have our first project in the U.S. So airdoms are the most affordable way of covering large venues. and they're heavily, heavily used for sports facilities, like tennis facilities, soccer facilities, and so on. So this is the majority of my focus at the moment.
And you've also went into some property business as well, correct?
Yeah, so in 2020, after having a friend who's probably the biggest property developer in Romania and having the chance to play tennis with him and squash with him and him sharing his, I guess, his insights out of being the biggest property developer in Romania, I decided to go into property development myself. So I started a property development company. We finalized our first project. Our second one is in construction. But yeah, it's a very, a business where I've learned a lot as well. It because you no longer deal with tens of people or hundreds of people. You actually deal with thousands of people on site building or people that are helping you manage the whole thing. Then that came with a lot of challenges, and that was another another great way of learning.
So I know we talked a lot about like limiting beliefs and glass ceilings and stuff when we were designing the episode. And we were talking a little bit about the mindset that it takes to become a pro athlete and the focus and things. And then you said business was so different, but required, you know, other types of resiliency. Can we talk a little bit about the difference between how your mind had to be at a pro athlete level and how it's grown and shifted now that you own multiple businesses?
To me, business and sports are a lot alike, because you're in a way, sports increases your resiliency to failure. You need to be disciplined. You need to pay attention to the parties that you're dealing with. And these are in many ways qualities that also translate in the world of business. I feel like that's probably one of the top three reasons why I feel like I'm an above average or successful entrepreneur, is due to my background in tennis and the fact that I spend a big part of my life, dealing with challenging, trying to become better every day, being disciplined. I guess to your point, the only thing that I see different is that now you, in a way, in business, probably sometimes you are alone. In many sports, you usually it's a team effort, and I feel like in business, it's you need to be holding yourself accountable every day to make sure that you're chasing the goals that you have.
Right. So holding yourself accountable, because a lot of your business is international as well, meaning that you are working across all of these time zones and things. How do you hold yourself accountable for doing this, I guess, in business the way that you do, when you were used to having people around you kind of helping you achieve your goals?
I currently work with mentors. I in the Erdom business, I have a mentor that is helping me on the, I guess, lead generation, marketing, sales side of it. And then I have another mentor that is helping me on the execution side of it. So in a way, because I meet with them weekly, and I have an action plan between each meetings, I sort of together in partnership with them keep myself, and they keep me accountable to make sure that I am disciplined in the way that I do the actions required by me and the team to achieve the targets that we set for ourselves. And other than that, I'm very clear about my dreams and the steps that I need to take to get there. And I sort of split that in between. Every year I have a very clear action plan on where do I need to get to this year in order to get to my sort of 5-year goal or 10-year goal. And again, that gives me clarity on how the actions that I take today, they play a big role in, I guess, my big long-term dream.
Right. So were you a planner when you played tennis?
In a way, yes. I feel like I wasn't a very talented player. Therefore, I had to compensate in other ways. I was very well prepared physically. I was always investing a lot of time in planning and strategizing and thinking how I can overcome different people that I was playing with.
You just said something incredibly profound, and that was you were able to play at the professional level, but you don't consider yourself very talented. How does that translate to business?
So I feel like in tennis, my vision is that some people are working hard and some people are talented. And in a way, I personally like more, or I think it's actually better to not be talented than be working hard, because I feel like a lot of talented people, they are not as incentivized to work hard, and that, I guess that also in as only 1% of the tennis players probably make it to the top level, that doesn't translate as much in the life that they'll have after. So I actually feel grateful that I was not very talented, because it made me develop other qualities to compensate I guess my shortcomings. Because in a way, in tennis, you probably need to start at around 3, 4, 5 years old in order to have a bigger chance of getting to the highest level. I started when I was 10, so I sort of started with a handicap in a way.
Wow. Okay. That's an incredible thought, just sitting here swirling. It's like you would rather not be talented and work hard because you could overcome maybe the talent deficit with strategy, accountability, and hard work.
To me, a parallel that I see here, I see it with kids that get a lot of money from their parents. Even though short-term, that's a blessing, long-term, I think that's a curse. As they don't get the chance of hustling out to get stuff, or they don't get the chance of working really, really hard to make some money, and then with that money, I don't know, buying a property and experiencing that excitement that you have that you don't really have when things are handed to you on a silver platter. So I think that's, I guess, a parallel that I see to talented, not talented sort of perspective.
Yeah. So we have talked a little bit about limiting beliefs and glass ceilings. And what are some of the limiting beliefs that you saw, I guess, that you were breaking through to be able to go into international business with the confidence and success that you have?
Good question. I think a very important milestone on my journey, or sort of inflection point, was when I had a chance actually to spend time around people that did amazing and big things around me. So obviously we can all watch a YouTube video and see Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk do amazing things. But until you get the chance to be around really great entrepreneurs and to see how they think and ask them questions, I think that was a very important thing for me, because I met probably the richest Romanian person in Romania. There's a Romanian guy, Daniel Dineș, listed his company on the New York Stock Exchange. Again, another company, Andrei Diaconescu, he's the biggest property developer in Romania. And a lot of people like that. Because I had a chance to be around them, I sort of realized that even though, yes, they are very smart, and yes, they're very hardworking, they're still human. So in a way, I realized that I could also achieve big and extremely hard things in life if I can, I don't know, if these people have that I've had a chance of meeting did as well.
Right. So you made a point then to put yourself kind of in the room with these people. When you were playing tennis at a high level, you know, were you meeting businessmen and people, or did that something you had to like seek out separately later on after you finished, you know, your professional career?
In a way, tennis probably brings together a little bit of a higher quality of people. So by default, tennis players probably get to spend time with, I don't know, with the people that are more wealthier or more hardworking or more of an entrepreneurial mindset compared to other sports. So I'm saying this as I've played water polo for 3 years. I played the rugby for 2 years. So I had a chance of seeing this, I guess, density of smarter people be a bit different in different sports. So with that being said, yes, I think people that were gifted and lucky that their parents took them to tennis probably are a little bit luckier in this regard. And then secondly, something that I've done was a little bit clever in my first business, which was a tennis academy. I was going to all of these sort of business meetings with entrepreneurs and rich people, and I was giving them vouchers for free tennis lesson. So even though this can be perceived that, oh, this may be a cost, you're just wasting time and giving these free tennis lessons, that led me to connect with I guess, really successful people. And that, again, led to them becoming members with my tennis academy. And I feel like at some point I had members with my tennis academy, the richest people in the city, in a way, due to this strategy of going, offering something for free, and then a percentage of them would then later come and get a membership with us.
Yeah, that's brilliant, is, you know, collaborating with people that you want to kind of be around and do business with. So when you were ready to give up the tennis academy, and you had made all these connections and you got to know these people through that collaboration strategy, did people then support your transition or your pivot to property development and then ultimately to what you're doing now?
Very good question. At that point, I was probably believing yes, but in reality, no, because the tennis school was in Romania and the property development company is in Australia. I couldn't really bring any of my high net worth individuals to invest in Australia. Well, they were probably a bit reluctant due to the fact that this was my first development, due to the fact that it was in a different country and it was hard for them to picture. However, I made new connections in Australia. So I guess that there are limitations perhaps in terms of where people are willing or unwilling to invest regardless of the relationship that you have with them.
Right. Okay. So you then legitimately have created your business networks a couple of different times then. How do you do that? Like, let's talk from not only pivoting businesses and changing careers, you had to reach out and build networks in several different countries for different reasons. What are some of your strategies for networking?
One would be just attending many, many events. I had days in Australia when I was attending 3-4 networking events the same day. And then making sure that you are disciplined in what you do with those contacts, I guess, and putting them in a database, sending them an email, maybe an email for Christmas, and try to keep in touch with them, even though you don't need something at that point, but you may consider that they could be helpful in 3 years from that point. And secondly, just being present over and over and again. I think people gain trust in time, and it's very hard that you meet the person one time and then you ask for investment. If they met you for 8 times during 3 years, and they see that you're a nice guy and people always talk nicely about you, then it's likely that 2 years down the line they may agree to help you in a project if you reach out to get investment from them.
Yeah, so it sounds like, you know, you've played the long game, I guess, in that you make these connections and you're working these different types of businesses, but it doesn't sound like you take anything as an accident or as a one-time thing. You're cultivating all of these contacts and the gifts and strategies in order to really last a very long time, no matter what it is you're actually doing, let's say 20 years from now.
Yeah, I consider myself, so I'll elaborate a little bit. So I feel like we are all, in a way, either greedy or fearful. These are the two biggest emotions that govern us. And in my case, I try, whenever I think of the things that I am doing, I always try to be long-term greedy. So I always try, if I have a decision that I need to make or something that I'm considering doing, I'm trying to optimize for the long term, not really look at what I would be gaining today. As an idea, I feel like focus. If today you focused on 7 things, then today you may be in a better position, but long term you're not really helping yourself. I think even the way I spend my time and the amount of things I say no to is again for this vision of mine that I try to be long term greedy and try to optimize always for the long term the decisions that I make.
And again, I want to bring that back to sports because, I mean, how much time did you spend practicing for, you know, a match before you were out there on the court for not that long to win or not win? Do you think that this long-term kind of perspective came from the fact that you were an athlete at that level?
Perhaps. I feel like one of the most important leading factors, in my opinion, if somebody will or will not have success, is how much they're willing, how much effort they're looking, they're willing to put in something until they see a result. So as an idea, I perceive people that have a job that they're sort of working today in a way today they're getting paid. With entrepreneurs, in my first, I guess, in tennis or in this development business, I worked for like 2.5 years until I got paid. There's not a lot of people that are in one in a position or then willing to place to make such long-term plays. And those are the ones that I think they have the most compounding effects in a way.
Yeah, and it sounds like it comes right back around again to that accountability and that discipline and, you know, that perspective of wanting to have, you know, impact over a longer term.
Yeah. I think tennis is definitely a very good tool or a very good sport that helps you in that direction, because obviously you train today, or like in the people that play in the Olympics, you train today and then you may have a competition four years down the line. So you need to be able to deal with the resiliency and to sort of have those, sort of be able to deal with this delayed gratification in a way for a long time.
Yeah, let's talk about that resiliency and delayed gratification. Did you ever think, or have it crossed your mind when you started the businesses, whether it was the Tennis Academy, property development, did you ever feel like it wouldn't work or you weren't seeing results fast enough?
Always. I feel like I would always probably want to grow to double, triple the pace that I am with any business. In a way, that is a little bit of the reasoning why I sold the Tennis Academy. I realized that regardless of what I'm doing, this can become a huge business, or there is nobody on the planet, as far as I know, that has a huge business out of just the Tennis Academy. But that's the reason, because I was pushing and pushing and realized that I don't see a way to get to my dreams through that business, I sold it. Then I guess with the property development company is where I see the property development like in a way a defensive play, where I am aggressive in business, but in the Erdom business, but I also like to have a defensive play where I park part of the money that I get to make in these developments, and I try to retain as much as I can. And even now, there's a project that I'm about to do to the solar power farm, where I'm doing it and I'm not going to sell it probably for the next 20 years. So again, I guess this is my perception of things. I'm very aggressive with the Erdom business. I grow as fast as I can, and I'm defensive with the property development business that I do.
Do you think being able to, you know, be aggressive in one and defensive in the other helps with the mindset of you're not seeing results fast enough? Or because, again, your perspective is, you know, strategy over the long term, and then having that resilience, the accountability and the discipline. But how do you know you're balancing that, I think, by being aggressive in one and more defensive in the other? Does that help on the days where it feels like it's just not working?
I don't know. I think entrepreneurs or myself, talking just about myself here, I feel like in most days you feel like it's not working. But those are the days that you need to push equally as much as in the days where it's not working. I feel like business is, in a way, a marathon where you're judged not on your best days, but the consistency that you have on an average day. And yeah, I guess getting back to your question about the growing or not growing fast enough, I feel like business is a formula. You need to be very clear and monitor the formulas of your business and see how you can do fine tuning on all of the sort of milestones within your process to increase the speed and push. Today you push one variable, tomorrow you push another variable. Something that I'm just done recently, we've automated on the Erdom business the process of sending quotations. And probably this will be the first month where we've quoted $100 million in projects. Because of this little tweak that we did, we realized that it was taking too much time for us to go from an inquiry to a quote. And by automating the process, now we're going instantly in seconds. Somebody goes on our websites and gets a quote for an Erdom. And this month generally is a $100 million month. Obviously, only a percentage of this will lead to sales. But if at the worst case scenario, if we convert 1%, that's $1 million per month.
Right. So it sounds like, in addition to not wanting to necessarily be talented, but rather working hard and doing strategy, you're always trying to improve and get to kind of being in the place of business where you are solving the problems you didn't know you had.
Yeah, you need to be aware of what are the... You need to be to realize where you want to go, what numbers, what formulas you need to improve, and then monitor them daily, weekly, or at the worst case scenario, monthly, but not wait for a year to pass to realize that you have not achieved the result that you wanted. And the more that you monitor something, the faster I think that number it improves. If you're talking about your weight or your the leads that you're generating or the sales that you're making or the quotes that you're sending, the more you monitor, the faster that number will improve.
Right. Amazing. Yeah. One small tweak, $100 million. That's incredible. For anybody who's listening in here, I think you said something incredible about being judged by the consistency on the average day. And it was probably not that much of an extraordinary day when you discovered that you needed to make this automated change. And all of a sudden you've gotten $100 million in quotes.
Yeah, it's that's an example. I think that there are a lot of examples like this, but it all comes from pain. I think failure or the days that are not going that well are painful. And then if you can take that pain and be upset about it, oh, this is not working, that is not working, or use that as fuel for your journey. I feel like in a way, failure, challenges, and adversity, I see them not as a barrier on my journey. I see them as the kerosene of my rocket, in a way.
Oh, I love that. Turning it around. So, Dan, where can people find you, learn more about you, read about you, and connect with you?
So, either on our website, hero.holdings, or on LinkedIn, Dan Lazar, or Dan Lazar Erdoms is probably an easy way for them to find me. But yeah.
Fantastic. So we're going to put those links down inside the show notes so you can connect with Dan and watch his journey. And also, I just, the wisdom that you've said, there's a few nuggets in here. I'm going to pull them out because I have some pretty cool things that I think you've said that maybe you didn't realize how cool they were. I think it comes from your sports background. Like you said, the one that stuck out to me was that you played multiple sports for multiple years and you realized that tennis is actually the place where you found more of like a peer group. And it's making me really think about who it is we're hanging out with, who it is that we're wanting to align ourselves with. And, again, I would say the people that are on the tennis side are probably more disciplined than the people who watch rugby matches, to use your example. So I really appreciate this conversation. Thank you so much for spending time with us today and bringing us your wisdom.
Thank you, Donna. I really appreciate this. So this was, I love the questions. Thank you very much.
All right. We'll talk to you all next time on the next episode of the Profit Accelerator podcast. Take care.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Profit Accelerator podcast. If you want some more information about me or free resources, please visit my updated website, DawnKKennedy.com. Follow me on social at DawnKKennedyXO on Instagram and on Facebook at DawnKKennedyMentor. I'll see you next time.